Welcome into another episode of the Leftovers Podcast. Derek Kramer.
Frank R. Curry.
And where do we start here on WGR550.com, On Demand Audio, and the Radio.com app? Holy crap. Bills game Sunday.
Bills is Sunday.
College football Saturday.
UB.
UB.
Tomorrow.
Sanders
hockey's
training
back.
Camp started. Eric Carlson got traded. Where do we start? There's too much.
There's a lot.
Time to shoot off the hip here. We'll go Bills.
Start Bills.
Because, I mean, Josh Allen is the starter for this game against the Los Angeles Chargers. It's still not the San Diego Chargers anymore, no matter how many times anyone's going to screw it up. Chargers coming here. No Joey Bosa. That's good. But they still have Melvin Ingram to help out with a fierce pass rush. They still have Casey Hayward, who is one of the best corners in the game. And the Bills still look bad on Sunday last week. So that can't be ignored either. I'm starting to wonder something, though, Frank.
What's that?
That preseason game where Josh Allen was just getting dominated by the Bengals defensive line?
Yeah.
Yes, I know the Ravens did the same exact thing, but since he's good, I think that's one of the biggest things that I'm taking away at this point, is that since he's just really good, and maybe Josh Allen was berated by that line because, well, they have a talented defensive line. Guess what? So does Baltimore. The Chargers, they have some injuries.
Bosa's out.
You really, Melvin Ingram's your other solid pass rusher. You know that he's probably going to be on the side there of Deion Dawkins.
Yeah.
Which means that your best lineman is taking on theirs. So there might be a sliver of hope that the line looks competent on Sunday against LA. Am I still going to take the Bills with the points? Hell no. No. At this point, no. Because the Bills looked so pathetic, not just on offense, but on defense, and that group got away with sneaking out the back door, by the way. The defense looked awful for very big stretches of the game against Baltimore. The zone coverage, very soft, allowed Flacco to check down and get yards after catch with his players. For the first two drives, it looked like they couldn't cover a tight end to save their lives. So I need to see better here before I could have faith in the Bills. But the biggest thing for me is, hey, Josh Allen starting. And I really hate the fact that it came to this quickly because of how bad Nathan Peterman was.
I mean, we saw with the Texans last year, it took a half for them to realize, yeah, we should be playing our rookie, Deshaun Watson. So that's what they did. And they had success until he got hurt.
Well, hopefully, if we could repeat that, that'd be pretty cool. I mean,
they're not going to do that because then at least Houston.
I'm talking about Allen going off like Watson.
Yeah, it's hard. I'm saying it's good. That's what I'm going at too. It's hard.
We
can hope, but it's going to be hard for that to happen because Allen doesn't have a DeAndre Hopkins.
No.
Allen doesn't have a Will Fuller.
No, he doesn't. He does have a LeSean McCoy.
He does have LeSean McCoy, and that's going to help.
The Texans have Lamar Miller or whatever that is.
So there's an advantage there in the running back, but in the receivers, he doesn't have much.
True.
So that's going to be a problem. My biggest thing going into Sunday's game, you were talking about the defense and how they're not really getting a pass in essentially for last week's game. I can understand why. They were on the field a lot.
They were on the field
most of the game. So for me going into this game, I want to see sustained drives, time of possession. If the Bills can keep their defense off the field a little bit more, I think then you'll see a better performance by the defense when Phillip Rivers is on the field and throwing the ball. Because that's when your defense, we've seen it before. When the defense is out there for a long time throughout the game, mm-hmm. It wears them down. And obviously, it didn't help that they got picked apart so quickly. So early in the game, but it also doesn't help that they were out there forever.
Yeah, it just again part of this for me is the whole it's almost like a chicken and egg kind of conversation. Do you think the defense could have been better if they weren't on the field so much? But I'm sorry, they took Baltimore took that first that opening drive right down the field.
Yeah, they did.
And
they did.
Yes, the Bills went three and out, but then they went right back down the field again.
And that those are things. I got the possession numbers up, and
my problem is that game got off the rails quickly on both sides.
Yeah, and that is true. That's very true. But at the same, I think that's something where, and then especially when it was early on, because there was a lot of checkdowns to the tight ends that results in a lot of yards, you just had a lot of soft zone coverages.
Phil Gaines lost John Brown on a 28-yard gain
on a 2nd and 26.
Yeah,
so. And those are things, and
that's where I'm going to call him into question. I'm not going to call him into question for giving up 40 some odd points. No, that's not what I'm doing that for. That's because, as a matter of fact, when you saw Baltimore's next two scoring possessions, they were short fields and they gave up field goals.
Yeah.
So you kind of saw the defense flex their muscles a little bit and try to get themselves back into this game. And that's where I think they're able to sneak out the back doors, because they at least showed some sort of promise, whereas the offense just did not do anything in that whole first half. And their one scoring drive came when Josh Allen came in.
I got the possession, time of possession numbers up.
It's probably really ugly, isn't it?
Not as bad as one would think.
Probably because of the fact that at the end of the game, you're just running out the clock as much as humanly possible, and the Bills were actually able to get some first downs.
Buffalo's time of possession was close to 25 minutes.
That's still pretty bad.
It's still bad. Baltimore was at 35.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
It's still bad, but it's not... as bad. When I was going into the page to look at possession, I was expecting more of like 40-20.
Yeah. But that's probably what it was on pace for after the first half.
Probably is true. So that's why for me I want to see the offense be able to not only get more than 3 points, get a touchdown. I want to see them sustain drives. March down the field. They don't have to. It doesn't have to be spectacular. Baltimore didn't do anything spectacular. Flacco wasn't just chucking the ball up every two throws. Most of his plays were checkdowns, because that's what he does. That's what you got
to
do.
There was one well thrown ball to Michael Crabtree for a touchdown.
But when you constantly checking down, you're going to open that up at some point.
But the big thing is, there's a pretty easy way to correct that. Lay off the soft zone.
Yeah.
That's it. That's all you have to do. And you can get those checkdowns kind of taken care of at that point.
Do you think a lot of that soft zone was because the Ravens don't have that elite receiver?
I think it's because of Joe Flacco's arm that they had the soft zone going on.
Okay.
Because they respect the deep threat that there is with Joe Flacco.
Yeah.
Which will bring us to Josh Allen in a bit.
But so then my question for going into for game planning the defense going into
Philip Rivers,
are you going to have a more man coverage with Rivers, or are you going to still be in a zone scheme?
You could have aggressive zone schemes. You can have tight zone schemes. You play a lot of soft zone in the fact of, you know, John Brown is a speed demon.
Yeah.
And Joe Flacco has the cannon arm, and you definitely do not want to give that up, because that's an insta touchdown.
Yep.
With the Chargers, you have a balanced offense.
Yeah.
So you're going to need to mix up the play call.
So that's why I asked that.
You're going to see
some
man coverage concepts in there, because I'm sorry, but if I'm playing a zone concept and someone other than Tre'Davious White is covering Keenan Allen, you're toast.
Yep.
It's over.
Yeah.
That's where my problem is. Mm-hmm. Leslie Frazier really has to be able to tune it up and fix up whatever the hell the play calling was in week one. I could see why it was a certain way, but at some point after he's decimating you, you got to mix things up. And I better bet that that's going to happen here
week two. We're also going to need to see Vontae Davis on the field.
Vontae Davis probably will be on the field because
he should be.
Taron Johnson has been injured.
Yes.
Which means Philip Gaines is going to have to move inside at the nickel corner, which means that Vontae Davis will have to be on the outside. You're going to see Vontae Davis in this game.
Good. Then he should, and he's probably going to be on Mike Williams.
Yes. Besides, you only have four healthy corners at this point, too.
Yeah.
So Vontae Davis will be here.
Yep.
He will be playing. So now to Josh Allen. And how are they going to game plan against him? I've got one answer and one answer only. Blitz the hell out of the rookie.
Yeah.
That's really what it's going to come down to.
You got to expect that's what they're going
to
do.
And guess what? The Ravens did it to Peterman. You want to know why? Fun fact for you, in his first preseason, Nathan Peterman was terrible against the Blitz. In his actual games, he was terrible against pressure. So what do you do here? Yes, you're going to need a spy because Josh Allen can move. And that's a big thing. And I think that's where hopefully the Bills' offense can really get something going. Is because Josh Allen can move. You saw a lot of the RPO concepts. But the thing is, you're running them with a guy in Nathan Peterman who's never really run an RPO before last week. So I don't know if he was making the right reads when it comes to when to hand the ball off, when not to. There were a lot of RPO concepts being run by Dable, and guess what? Josh Allen thrives in that sort of situation. So I'm a little interested to see what the hell happens here with Josh Allen on RPOs and Chargers having to respect not only his big arm, but his mobility. Also, it'd be nice to be not losing 14-0 within three drives.
That would be true, too.
Because you lose out on more LeSean McCoy touches, the uglier it gets quicker.
Yeah.
That's what happened there. You saw next to no LeSean McCoy in that one because, one, it turned into a chasing game early, and then it became a blowout very quickly. So you saw, what, 7 carries for McCoy?
Yeah, okay. Something like that.
That's not a recipe for anyone to succeed. Peterman, Allen, if McCarron was still here. Hell, if we signed Teddy Bridgewater instead, that's still not a recipe for success.
Mm-hmm.
To be down 14-0 within the first three drives, combined from the two teams, that's terrible. Baltimore always has had that stout run defense.
Yep.
The Chargers have had a solid defense, but it's banged up. Is there a chance that you can look better? Well, first off, good God, I hope so.
Yeah.
But second, how are you going to look better? I think the run game is where it starts. It's going to look better because you're not dealing with Baltimore's aggressive run defense.
Yeah.
But again, I don't know how much better this team can look because they were so terrible that all benefit of the doubt kind of has been erased. It's so bizarre what happens in a week's time.
It really is in the NFL. It really is, you know.
Now, I think that Josh Allen can get some things done. I really do. But I also think that the Chargers offense is so talented and so balanced that the Bills ultimately do lose this game.
Now, what's the line right now in the game is...
Nine points. That's redonkulous.
Yeah.
Like, what the hell?
It's hard to see, especially with how bad the offense was last week. Now the defense is playing a talented offense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In the Chargers. It's hard to really see this game being close.
Right.
I think there's a possibility that it will. The Bills are at home. They're going to have that riding. You got the rookie starting, and there's going to be unpredictability with that. He might do a lot of good things, then he might do a couple bad things.
The question, though, is what is going to be outweighing the other?
Exactly.
Is the bad going to outweigh the good? Are we going to see the Josh Allen habits that scared the hell out of me when I was scouting him at Wyoming? Or are we going to see the guy that can make those beautiful plays that we saw the flashes in the pan?
I think if the game gets out of hand really quickly, like it did last week, we might see those Allen habits.
Yes.
Because he's going to try to...
It's going to come down to one thing. Can that interior offensive line look better than whatever the hell that was against Baltimore.
Yeah.
And the preseason game against Cincy.
Mm-hmm.
That was a pretty big precursor, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't it? That a lot of people were worried about the offensive line after that third preseason game.
Yep.
And now you're seeing why. Because we kind of ignored it with the Cleveland game. Because people thought, AJ McCarron tends to hold the ball sometimes a little too long. But what about against Carolina? Peterman had that ball out so quickly that you didn't see the flaws in the offensive line.
Yep. Yep.
The starting line looks atrocious.
It's bad. And we shouldn't really be surprised because the Bills never really did anything to improve it.
They did try some things. However, signing Russell Bodine is not what I would call the greatest
move. And we obviously, too, it didn't help that they weren't expecting Eric Wood to retire. They weren't expecting...
They had time for that, and they did address the center position. The biggest thing was that they had too much faith in the in-house answers.
Yeah.
They had too much faith in Vlad Dukas, which I still don't know why.
Yeah.
They had too much faith in Ryan Groy or Russell Bodine to win the job. And they still had too much faith
They definitely had faith in Miller and somehow Dukas. But with the center position, it didn't feel like that they tried to make improvements.
One position they signed a player to. So I'm going to check you on that. They signed someone in free agency that was a starting center in the league. So that was the one that they did address, was the center. What they didn't do was address the guard.
Yeah.
They drafted Wyatt Teller in the fifth round, and you know what? To all credits, first off, Teller doesn't look ready.
He wasn't even active.
And guess what that means? That you put too much faith in-house.
Yeah.
Miller and Dukas have been terrible. Ryan Groy has looked pathetic. There was a play where, like, within 2 seconds, Groy is on his back and they are coming at Peterman.
Yeah.
Within 2 seconds. Good luck getting any success from that. That's not to excuse Peterman, of course.
Yeah, that's
but
not. Yeah.
This line has not looked good.
It's not helped.
And here you go, the boogeyman, the Chargers. Last time we threw a rookie in, the Chargers ate it up. It's a different rookie. It's a more prestigious rookie. Probably more physically talented. Easily more physically talented, I should say.
Still a rookie.
But he's still a rookie. He could make bad decisions. And guess what happens there? Good defenses tend to pick that off.
So, okay. I want to stick with the Bills. I have this question.
Okay.
I've been thinking about it all week.
Yeah.
And I believe Mike Schoep brought it up earlier this week on Schoep and Bulldog, and or at least in a way, kind of made me think of this question. How much does the city itself impact hiring coaches? Hear me out on this. What do we know about the city of Buffalo? It's a cold place in the winter.
Mm-hmm.
But what are the people usually described as?
Blue collar, hardworking.
And like you got the coat, and then what was that last one?
They like fourth line grinders too much.
Yeah. And you get the coach who has similar characteristics. I know this was after Rex Ryan as well, but
I think McDermott was a hire. You bring up Rex Ryan to answer this. They wanted the opposite. Ryan was a showman. They wanted someone hardworking, nose to the grindstone.
Right. However,
they went with an established coach. They went with the coordinator.
Right. But here's my thing. Look at a team like the LA Rams. What do we know about the city of Los Angeles? It's flashy. It's
sunny, blah, blah, blah. I don't know how much I can buy into this because I know where it's going.
My big thing about this, they hired Sean McVay, offensive minded, flashy, flair, you know, more dramatic, flares for the dramatic, I should say.
Well, it's just that it's a fun offense.
Yeah. Because the people who live in LA can relate more to that kind of coach, that kind of mindset, the flashiness, the fun.
All right.
Whereas the people of Buffalo have a mindset that relates more to McDermott's style of hardworking, built through grind. And I wonder how. So I wonder how much that it sounds crazy. I know it.
Like I said,
but I wonder how much that has that relates into the hiring process.
I don't know how much that should.
Because when you're an owner and you're trying to and you have to hire a new coach, you got to make sure the fans like them too.
You know what my problem is then? It's this. If that is something that actually happens here, then they deserve to lose.
That's my and that's
hire the best candidate that you believe could be.
And that might be my worry. That could be my worry.
You think that this happened, therefore it's going to go
and
down.
I get that they were going with the opposite of Rex Ryan. But you could also go with the opposite of what's the other opposite of Rex Ryan? Get an offensively minded coach.
When was the last time we hired an offensively minded coach?
Yeah.
Chan Gailey?
Yeah.
And that didn't work out well because he was so old and set in his ways.
But if they had it, but I mean, when Ryan Fitzpatrick was a quarterback.
Look at all the coaches actually in the drought. Only Chan Gailey is the offensive mind. Oh, Mike Mularkey.
Yeah, Mike Mularkey
too.
So
two.
Yeah.
Two of them.
But guess what? 17 years. Both of those coaches have at least had success not with the offense in terms of the Bills had an offense.
Yes, they did.
With those coaches, they just didn't really have a defense. The closest was the 04 Bills.
The Chan Gailey defenses, man.
The Chan Gailey defense was terrible. Woof, if that woof. Defense was average,
woof.
They might break the drought earlier.
Yeah, that drought doesn't happen as long as
it
does.
There is, and it's a possibility Fitzpatrick would have been here longer. We may not even have drafted EJ Manuel. Because that offense, because Fitzpatrick did have success.
Yeah.
He had a couple good years.
He did.
He did earn that contract in a way. He still likely would have been like, hey, kind of overpaid for him.
I still think
that
was trigger happy.
But you got your guy.
That was a trigger happy contract.
But it's not like he had like, it wasn't a Garoppolo thing.
Yeah.
It wasn't just like he had a few good games. He at least had 2 years.
All right. So anyway, my main point being this.
I like what McDermott has brought. I wonder if that is a thing.
We're going to have to see. Because twice now he's gone to this Nathan Peterman experience, and twice that has blown up in everyone's face.
And I'm worried, and I worry that because they got a guy like Josh Allen, who he's not a flashy quarterback. He's got that. Yes, he's got the arm. He's got the arm. Yes, he's got the arm. He can move.
He's got the athletic ability.
He's got the athleticism. Yes.
Honestly, if you want the blue collar hardworking kind of thing, you wouldn't have taken the guy that has the most athletic upside.
That's fair.
You know. It's frustrating. Everything's frustrating.
I wonder things like
but
that.
But if the Pegulas and the Bills hired someone based on the city, well, then you deserve to lose.
And if they do, if they continue, which they probably will, and nothing improves in the next couple of years, maybe my theory's got some legs to it.
All right.
But we'll see. I don't want it to be true. I don't want to think that as well. It's something that I wonder.
Yeah, I'm not too fond of this theory. I think it's.
I don't like it too. I thought of that. I thought of how the Rams have had that turnaround where you get that you're in LA, flashy city.
Yep.
People there. You know. You get something that they love. It's that fun style. It's. You know. The flashiness, yeah.
Yeah, I get that. It just, again, I don't, I hope they don't make decisions based on that.
Yeah.
Because if they do, then they deserve every bad thing that would come to them.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no.
It's hard for – it's also because it's just until they show
– But I also know what you mean until, because being drafted Allen because of the weather. And yeah. I cringed every time yeah. that we had a guest on GR all throughout the draft process that said, oh, Josh Allen would be great here, you know, combating the strong Buffalo winds. That's like three games a year if that. What about the other 13?
Yeah.
The laughable thing, though, was...
And because
with the weather,
blue collar and grind.
With how the weather was in Baltimore, the snarky thing is maybe you should have started the guy that is built for the harsh weather.
Yeah.
As I roll my eyes.
Yeah.
And cry myself to sleep.
All right. I don't want to see this. I want to see this Bills team have that fun offense. Just like how...
Yes.
We want that for the Sabres as well. And they've at least are making moves to do that, whereas we haven't seen that yet with the Bills. And
yeah, good Lord, get us a receiver.
Yeah. Like,
what are you doing?
Like the Rams, their first year in LA, have that terrible year with you fire Jeff Fisher, obviously. That happened. Because they already have Goff.
What Robert Woods does his first year away from Buffalo.
Yeah. And
it's like he was actually good or something.
Took that one off season after Goff's rookie year, and they completely make a 360 on it.
You mean a 180?
Or yeah, 180. Sorry,
because a 360 is just a full turn.
Yeah, I was just,
so.
But yeah, they
yeah
they just sign Robert Woods, trade for Sammy Watkins.
You've already got Gurley. It hurts to see that sort of thing. Yes, and.
I'm gonna keep having that kind of thought process until they at least show that they're trying to build, they're building up that kind of style. They want to go down that route,
right?
It's just until then, it feels like they're going down the route of built through the run on offense and win with their defense.
Hmm.
Because they look to be built that way because they've really only made improvements to their defense.
Oh, yeah. And again, it just...
And it worries me that they're going to continue to do it in the offseason.
Then they deserve what happens to them if they struggle.
Yeah. And that's my worry.
I get that. I just, again, I don't think that sort of hiring happens. But if it does, well, we'll have fun doing this again in 3 years.
Yeah.
Is basically what I would say.
Yeah.
All right. So moving on from the Bills. I mean, we both picked LA in the pick'ems. I can't really predict a score here because I don't know what the hell the Bills' offense is going to do.
I don't know either.
Offense was so trash last week. I can't even give them credit for possibly scoring points.
They might score. Actually get a touchdown, and that's it.
I don't think so.
Then you could be right.
That's how much I hated that game.
You could say they might get shut out. Yeah, probably. Legit, they probably will. Or you could be like, they might score 10 points. You might even be pushing that.
I'm going to go with like 28-9. Sure, whatever.
Three field goals.
Yeah.
That's it. Still don't get a touchdown.
Yep.
I'm going to say they find a way to get a touchdown and maybe a field goal. I'm going to say the score is going to be like 27-10.
All right, let's talk about things that make me feel better.
Sabres,
UB. I mean, UB against Eastern Michigan.
Yeah.
On Saturday, Alumni Field. 6 o'clock?
Yes.
6 o'clock. In the first game of conference play, this is huge.
Mm-hmm.
Because the conference is really the question mark for UB. Everyone thinks that, you know, the out-of-conference schedule is favorable for UB, and it's just that you got to make some noise in-house.
Yeah.
And with conference games, sometimes the strangest things happen. Can UB go ahead and get to 3-0? That'd be huge. That'd be amazing, especially with what's going on with the Bills. This is probably the greatest opportunity for them to strike. Just like how the Big Four basketball scene last year went off in a big way when the Sabres were butt. It looks like UB might be looking at potentially another perfect chance to strike. Because if the Bills flop again, and UB is 3-0, you might see people just be like, I should just watch this team instead of the Bills, because there's actually good football being played. So why not?
Yeah. Eastern Michigan right now, 2-0 as well.
So this is going to be a toughie.
Coming off a 20-19 win over Purdue last week.
They beat a Big Ten team.
Yep.
So this looks like this has the makings of one of those kinds of slugfests.
Yeah.
I'm excited to see what happens.
I am so excited for this game.
Get down to there to that game. If you can't get down there, you can always listen on our sister station at ESPN 1520, by the way. Can UB get to 3-0 is the big question.
Mm-hmm. And
they have the talent to do it on offense.
Khalil Hodge is going to have a big game on defense.
Anthony Johnson played with a heavy heart.
You did.
Last week.
You did.
And came away with one of the greatest grabs to help win the game.
Mm-hmm.
And this is standard for UB. The amazing plays right now on offense, not the players playing with a heavy heart part. But you're looking at a team that they really can put the points up. And like you said, the defense is going to need to make sure to keep things at bay. We can expect the offense to put points up.
Yeah.
The defense has to be able to keep pace and at least get that stop. And that's what happened against Temple. They got that stop when they needed it. Because that was a back-and-forth affair.
This is going to be a slugfest.
This really is. UB and Temple was punch each other in the face.
Yeah.
Until someone finally misses, and that was Temple. Temple did not get another drive to respond to UB taking the lead.
Mm-hmm.
I see another thing like this happening, and I think UB does get to 3-0. Let's go.
Let's go.
It'd be really cool to see a successful UB team here.
Want to hear some little stats about both these teams?
Okay.
UB 2-0, 84 points so far in both games, averaging 42 points.
Oh, God.
Eastern Michigan 2-0, 71 points.
Both can fly.
Both can fly. And points against, Eastern Michigan is giving up 36, and UB is giving up 39.
This is just going to be back and forth.
Back and forth.
Let's go. Hopefully we get something out of this. Both of them had a pretty soft week one opponent.
Yep.
Both of them came away with impressive non-conference wins in week two.
Yep.
Let's see what they've got. All right.
I'm going to hit the ice.
Should we laugh at Ottawa first? I guess that answer is yes.
Oh, my God.
Just when Pierre Dorion looked like he was going to get some things straightened out and be only the second worst GM in the NHL.
How do you trade one of the best players in the world and still don't have any leverage in it?
Because Eugene Melnyk is a terrible, terrible owner.
Yeah.
And should give up the team. That's my answer.
They have that. They make that Twitter video of him and of him and Mark Borowiecki, of all people.
Well, hey, they need him now since they just traded their best defense.
Yeah. Yeah, like Borowiecki's going to help. And it was like a 6-minute video. And then they trade Erik Karlsson yesterday. So he's on, and now Erik Karlsson's on the Sharks.
Yeah, jeez. Oh, my God.
Sharks' top four is now Erik Karlsson, Brett Burns, and Mark-Edward Vlasic.
All right. So let's talk about how this has, real quick, about the Sabres ramifications.
Oh, my God.
So the Sabres, we're going to hope.
So remember that thing about.
So as the offseason began, everyone's like, okay, if they get John Tavares, that locks them into that playoff spot, which means that we get that 2019 first round pick. Guess what? It's the same thing, except now, instead of John Tavares, it's that they actually got Erik Karlsson.
Yeah.
So now we can expect the Sabres to be picking.
And San Jose tried to get.
They almost got him.
They offered him $13 million a year.
They almost got him.
They almost got him.
Tavares had it between the Leafs and the Sharks at the end of all things.
Yeah.
The Sharks are in an arms race. And on paper, it should be Sharks and Lightning. However, that's not how things work.
Doesn't work like that in the
but
NHL.
But you know what's going to work? Buffalo getting that pick late in the first round in 2019.
That's even the best part. Because Ottawa's
conditional first round pick
is either it's supposed to either be 2019 or 2020. Now
the Sharks are making the playoffs.
The Sharks are making the playoffs. They're winning the division.
They're too talented to not make the playoffs.
Which means that Buffalo's going to get the 2019 first. Ottawa's going to get the 2020 first from San Jose.
And that's laughable. That means that
they
Ottawa
traded their best player, the best player they've ever had, a two-time Norris defenseman.
For a package that includes a guy named Norris.
Yeah, that's true. That is true.
Do you have any info on these prospects coming the other way? Because while you look at that, I do have to say this much.
And they still don't have a first round pick this year.
And that's what I want to go on.
I tweeted that yesterday, and I was like, that is the most hilarious thing ever.
They're on full tank, and they're going to get no reward for it because Colorado holds their first round pick now this year. And it's hilarious how much they're doing. And one of the conditions, by the way, there's a chance at another first round pick.
Yeah.
If Carlson ends up in the Eastern Conference, also known as
conditions.
Say San Jose can't get a deal done long term with Carlson.
I got the conditions.
All right.
Should the Sharks sign Carlson to a contract extension, Ottawa receives San Jose's second round pick in 2021, which would upgrade to a first, no lottery protected, if San Jose reaches the Stanley Cup Finals in 2019.
The Sharks we're talking about.
So if San Jose makes the finals this year and they re-sign Carlson, Ottawa gets a first-round pick in 2021.
Which, again, that's the condition.
So they
get
two. So then
they could get two.
Yeah.
But the big thing is,
but hang on.
The Sharks we're talking about, they are choke artists.
That's true. If Carlson is on an Eastern Conference roster during the 2018-2019 season, the Senators will receive an additional first-round pick in no later than 2022.
Also known as, we can't negotiate a long-term deal with Carlson. Crap, got to deal him at the deadline. Why would you do that? You're going on a cup push.
No, you know what that tells me?
That he doesn't trust Doug Wilson to flip him again? Like he did with Mike Hoffman?
Yes. Also, that tells me he had a better deal for Carlson from an Eastern team. And he refuses to trade within the East. Just like Mike Hoffman.
You know what? That just, whatever.
That's
Dorian.
What that tells me.
Whatever, Dorian.
I'll bet you Tampa Bay put in a much better offer.
And they're like, no, you play in the division. We're going to trade with you and then
we're gonna take a lesser offer from the Sharks and put this, and then they're like, yeah, we're going to take your offer, but you got to have these conditions.
Compare it to the Ryan O'Reilly trade. What kind of prospects are they giving?
All right.
Because you look at Max Pacioretty, for example, you look at Ryan O'Reilly, and some of these prospects that have come back on the other side of this are highly regarded. Nick Suzuki getting dealt
is a very good
from
prospect.
Vegas
yes.
to Montreal. Like, that's, I actually that's had to very, clap for Pierre.
For Mark Bergevin.
Yeah, Mark Bergevin.
Somehow.
Mixing up my bad GMs. Mark Bergevin actually got a good prospect.
Tage Thompson's a really good prospect.
Tage Thompson looked the part at the Prospects Challenge.
Okay. Well,
what are these
Chris
guys?
Tierney and Dylan DeMello are both NHLers.
Yes, they're roster end guys.
Third pairing, third line guys. Chris Tierney actually is probably going to be their number two center right now going into camp. Because
hell, he might be their one.
Once they trade Matt Duchene for peanuts, then he'll be. Because unfortunately, Jean-Gabriel Pageau is now out for 6 months following an Achilles surgery.
Oh, my God. Think about this. They might have to still trade Duchene and Mark Stone.
Yeah. No, they're going to trade Duchene
this
and Mark Stone.
This isn't over?
This isn't over.
Ugh. How bad can they be? Are they going to out-tank the Sabres tank and yet not have the first overall pick or second overall pick?
Yes.
Or even their first-round pick?
Yes.
They're going to be... I.
Yes.
I'm kind of scared to see how bad they are.
Josh Norris. 2017 first round pick.
Okay, so he's fresh.
19th overall. 19 years old. currently playing at the University of Michigan.
Okay.
Last season with the team, with Michigan, his freshman year, 23 points, 37 games, pretty solid. Played in the World Juniors as well, 3.7 games. He's a solid player. From what I've seen from him, his ceiling is no higher than a low-end top six forward. More likely, he's probably going to be a pretty good third-line center.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
That hurts.
He was probably San Jose's third or fourth best prospect.
All right, then.
Which isn't bad, but considering his ceiling, it's eh. Because San Jose's also been doing a lot of, you know,
all right,
going for it. The other guy, Rudolf Balcers, I believe it was, or Balker, something like that, from Latvia. Fifth round pick, 2015. He's 21. Had a really good year in the AHL last season. 48 points, 67 games, 23 goals. He was the Barracudas, one of their best players. Probably their best player, actually. So there's at least some promise with him that he can make the roster this year. He's a left winger. So we'll see what happens with him. I wouldn't say he's going to be a superstar, but he might be a pretty solid top nine scorer, but he's not a world ender. And Ottawa top prospect.
Yeah. And now here comes the big thing. Those first round picks, by the way, they're going to be in the bottom half of the round guaranteed.
Yeah.
Because San Jose is at minimum a playoff team with hilarious first round exits.
Yeah.
But could also be a Stanley Cup team.
Yeah.
So they could get two first round picks if the Sharks actually go ahead and fulfill on their potential and make the Stanley Cup finals.
Yep.
But if they don't, and they're just a deep playoff team, say runs into the Western Conference Finals, and then they fall short, like the Sharks generally do, then that means Ottawa gets one first-round pick, no top prospects, for Erik freaking Karlsson.
Yep.
Oh, and that Bobby Ryan Albatross contract is still on your roster.
Marian Gaborik's contract is still on the roster. Clark MacArthur is still on the roster. Contract's still on the roster.
Craig Anderson's play fell off a cliff, so he's not going to save everything
in sight. He's still on the roster.
You still have to trade Duchesne. You still have to trade Stone.
Mikhail Bakker's still on the roster.
How bad can this get? And that is something that I don't care to know, because that's not my problem.
It isn't. That's pretty great.
If the Sabres
it's not go, our problem.
If the Sabres go 500 or worse against Ottawa this year, they've got a problem.
Yeah.
Montreal, at least there's the excuse of Carey Price. Sabres lose two games to Montreal. It's like, oh, they have Carey Price. Okay.
Carey Price stole them.
That's a legitimate thing that happens. Ottawa? There is no reason to lose to them.
Yeah.
More than once. Because things do happen. It is hockey, after all.
Yeah. Ottawa better hope that something monumentally destructive happens this year in San Jose so that they can get their first round pick. Because, yes, Buffalo does have it, but if San Jose misses the playoffs,
that pick goes to them.
The pick goes to Ottawa, the Sabres get the 2020. And that's at least not lottery protected.
Yeah. All right. But let's talk about the Sabres. Training camp opens. Jeff Skinner, Jack Eichel, Kyle Pozo, one of the lines of training camp, first day.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
First preseason game, Monday.
Yeah. The first home one is Tuesday.
So what does this mean? All right, Sabres. Well, you're seeing Detroit lost Henrik Zetterberg.
Yeah, that was unfortunate.
And is already falling off a cliff.
Yeah. It's unfortunate for Zetterberg that it ended that this way.
It does really bite that it did end
future,
that way.
Future Hall of Famer.
Future Hall of Famer. He's, what, I think he was like fifth all-time or sixth all-time in points for the Red Wings in franchise history. And that's a franchise that had Steve Yzerman on there and Brandon Shanahan and Sergei Fedorov and
Pavel Datsyuk.
Pavel Datsyuk.
Gordie Howe.
Gordie Howe. So it's a pretty storied franchise. To be in the top 10 in scoring there, you did good.
He's fifth.
Top five in that storied franchise, you did good.
Yep, he did good. Detroit
bites. Yeah. Montreal bites, but they have Carey Price.
Yeah.
And Ottawa is on tank mode without a first rounder for some reason. The Sabres should be contending for at least the middle of the division with Florida. And if they're not, how much of a disappointment is it?
I don't think they have to contend. They have to...
I'm talking about being fourth in the division right now.
That's still going to be tough to do because Florida is a really good team.
What I'm saying, though, is they should be in contention for that. I'm not talking about making the dang playoffs, but yeah. I'm talking about, hey, at least be fighting with Florida to be on the top half of the division instead of the bottom of it.
I think they can. They should.
They have,
but the things do. The talent is there. The potential is there. Now it's a matter of reaching that potential. Because, you know, it's like we talk about Josh Allen. He has all of this potential, but it's not going to click right away. And that's the same thing for the Sabres. Jack Eichel looks like he's going to have a monster year.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be huge. Whenever Reinhart signs his contract, which hopefully is soon, he might have a really good year if he's playing with Eichel most of the year. Just as being a benefactor, being on his line. You've now got a Jeff Skinner, who's already talented enough as it is,
yep,
in a contract year. You know he's playing for a big contract in the summer.
And he's skating with a guy who can distribute.
And he's skating with Eichel right now as well.
Jake McCabe called him a son of a bee to play against.
Yeah.
Which is probably
now
one of the best compliments
you can
have.
Now you're adding the talent of Rasmus Dahlin. You're adding Casey Mittelstadt. But these two, they're still rookies. They have not played they played a combined 7 NHL games, all for Mittelstadt.
And now here's what I would like
They've never gone through the NHL grind.
They've never gone through that daily grind, you're correct. And as a matter of fact, you might see from Mittelstadt the same thing that happened with Brock Besser, where it seems like he's being scratched at random at the start of the season. But that's so that he can deal with the physical toll of travel and everything like that a college player was not used to. So I could see that. My big thing is this. From what I saw at the Prospects Tournament, we might be seeing that step up from Alex Nylander.
We might be.
You want to know why? I said it on Monday. I'm going to say it again. The dude looks like he gets it.
Yeah.
He's fighting for everything that he needs to get when it comes to any sort of puck battles. He is grinding. He is doing the little things that he would not normally do. He took pride in being on that penalty kill for the Prospects Challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And put up a beauty of a goal there, too, with a great play by Rasmus Asplund. Nylander had looked steady throughout the entire tournament. Was he dominant? No. But he did not disappoint either.
Yeah.
And then in that third game, he dominated.
And he went off.
He and Mittelstadt both dominated.
Yeah.
Tage Thompson, I thought, dominated through two games. And that's a guy who played 40 games in the NHL last year. So he has the experience. He just was pigeonholed into a fourth line role. You could see a step up from some of these prospects. I expect to see a step up from some of these higher end prospects.
And it's a lot of it, too, is because...
Because there's a spot open.
Not only there's spots open...
Possibly top nine, I should say.
There's competition.
Yes.
That's the biggest issue. That's where you're going to get the best out of the players. We see it with the Bills. There's competition. And it's in the forwards, and now it's in the defense.
I don't think using the Bills is a good example right now.
I understand. But my point stands. All you got to do is throw in some competition, and you can get the best out of players.
Yes, I do agree with that. Competition always does bring out the best in people, and I think that could happen here. My big thing is this. There's a chance for someone to secure at least a top nine position. and possibly a top six position,
mm-hmm.
go get it. And one of these kids looks like they're going to. Of course, it's only the prospects tournament, and you know sometimes prospects always look shinier when they're playing against other prospects, but it's pretty refreshing to see at the end of the day. Sabres get the preseason started on Monday. I want to see what happens. I want to see what the lines look like. I want to see what the style looks like. It's not like in the NFL where you have to hide schemes and you just go play hockey.
Yeah.
Fast and loose. Let's go, bro.
Let's go play hockey.
Yes, there are styles and there are designs and everything like that, but it's not like something that has to be picked apart by film.
I want to see a line of Mittelstadt, Nylander, and Olofsson in preseason. I want to see that line again.
Okay.
Because that line, that line's just dirty.
Mm-hmm.
Middlestat's playmaking ability, Nylander, now that he's looking good, and he continues that.
And he's fighting.
And now he's fighting for a spot. And Olofsson's shot.
I was always wild every time he shot the puck in the Prospects Challenge, by the way. Every time the puck left.
Is there a chance that Olofsson's shot alone might get him on the team?
If he
you might need that kind of shooting.
If he capitalizes.
Especially, yeah. Well, he looked like he was capitalizing.
For his shot, he didn't score a lot of goals. But the quick release on it, good God.
Goals will come.
Goals will come, but again.
And now he's going ready up against tougher talent.
I don't think he's ready yet. That's
yeah.
my thing.
Yeah.
I think 1 year in the AHL.
Might be all you need.
Might be all he needs because in the Prospects Challenge, he was doing those little things like one extra stick handle, like he had extra time.
Yeah.
Because of
and that you know what and that's going to come down to the North American game.
So I think 1 year in the AHL or even half a year in the AHL and he might be up.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to be needing to see Victor Olofsson on this. I dropped my phone.
I just that shot alone, like it's just
it's
deadly.
A wower.
It's deadly.
It's a wowser.
Yeah.
Bowser.
Yeah.
Bowser. Wowser. Bowser. Bowser.
Okay.
All right, Frank. Here we go.
Here we go.
One of the most exciting weekends of sports.
Yeah.
Sabres are back. The Bills hopefully bounce back. And the Bulls might be back.
Yeah.
Everything is heading to a fever pitch.
So I got a little thing.
Real quick. If the Bills flop again, they're dead to me for the year.
Okay.
I'm looking at the draft. We're calling draft guys every week, and I don't care. All right?
Okay, sounds good. So with Zetterberg now retiring.
Right.
You know how many games played his last 3 years were? He played all 82 games the last 3 years.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Consider that.
That's pretty whack.
And now he's retiring because of his back.
Let that be a lesson to everyone. Your back will give out on you. If you're a star NHLer or if you're a radio producer, your back will give out on you.
So I'd said that Zetterberg is fifth all time.
Correct.
In Red Wings in scoring.
Mm-hmm. Are you going to make me try to guess? Because I'm not going to do well at this.
I was only going to have you guess the rest of the top five.
Again. I'm not going to do well with this. I know Stevie Y is going to be one of them.
He's two.
I know that Gordie Howe is going to be on that.
He is number one.
All right, there we go. The easy ones are out of the way. Pavel Datsyuk.
No, Datsyuk is seventh.
I don't know if Shanahan played that much time.
Shanahan is 10th.
That's what I thought. How about Sergei Fedorov?
He is sixth.
Oh!
Zetterberg passed him last season. Dang. Zetterberg finishes his Red Wings career with 960 points in just under 1,100 games played.
How long was Paul Coffey on the Wings?
Not long enough.
Okay, didn't think so.
You're missing one obvious one.
I'm probably trust me, I miss the obvious ones. He was around forever. Chris Draper, I'm kidding. Chris Chelios wasn't a scorer.
No.
What the hell am I missing that's obvious here? Brett Hull didn't play there for that long.
No. You're missing three and four, and I will tell you this.
Kozlov?
No. One of them is a forward. 3 and 4. You're missing
3 and 4, and one of them are a forward.
One of them is a forward, yeah.
One of them are a forward.
I'll tell you this, though. Eighth on the list, somebody you've never heard of. Norm Ullman.
Okay.
Ninth is Ted Lindsay.
Okay. Dude, I'm not going to get these. I'm not good with the trivia. I'm really not.
One is obvious. You're going to hit yourself.
Probably. You do know that I'm not great with these things, right?
I know.
So why are you making me do this?
Because it's fun.
Shut up, Frank. We're wasting time. I need to eat food.
All right. Do you want to know who they are?
Yes.
Number three is the forward, Alex Delvecchio. Hall of Famer. He was around
Gordie
Howe.
That's the obvious one?
That's not the obvious one.
Oh.
I never said that was the obvious one.
Oh. So he was the forward. So the defender was the obvious one. It's Nick Lidstrom.
Yes. There you go. Okay.
All I needed was that extra push.
Yeah.
To get that one.
Yeah.
I wasn't getting three. To hell with three. All right. I'm hungry. I'm done.
Yeah.
I'm done recording. I'm hungry.
All right.
This has been the Leftovers Podcast. Speaking of food, well, great job there.
Yeah.
Should I have left it with the Bleepovers Podcast again?
Whoa.
I don't know anymore. All right. Anyway, you've been listening to Leftovers Podcast here on WGR550.com, on-demand audio, or through the radio.com app. I'm Derek Kramer.
I'm Frank R. Curry.
And hey, Sabres are getting started. Preseason game number one on Monday. The Bills hopefully bounce back on Sunday. The Bulls before that on Saturday. Bro, we're here. The fever pitch of sports in Buffalo is back. Weekends are going to be plenty fun going forward.
Go Sabres.
Go Bills.
Go Bulls.
Question mark.